Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Good morning. How are you keeping?
I'm very good. How are you, my friend?
I can't complain. We've had some good weather this weekend and lots of sports to watch.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just been a great weekend of sports, hasn't it? It really has. And so I don't even know where to start with you, Mark. It's just been amazing. I suppose we better start with the Ryder Cup. And what was your take on, there's some of the American fans that were there were really giving some abuse to Rory McIlroy, Northern Irish Rory, of course, from the European team. And some fans were escorted off the course. What was your take on all of that?
Well, yeah, we have to look at the final score, which was 15-13 to Europe.
Yes.
That is no way reflective of how that how the cup played out. It was unfortunate with the fans. You know, some call it passion, some call it crossing the line. What was bizarre to me is that it wasn't just the fans. Even an event MC was leading chants against Rory, which included a very naughty word, and it was just kind of bizarre. And Bradley, Keegan Bradley, who was the U.S. captain,
yeah,
sort of defended it as you know, it was passion and that the U.S. team had some sort of chance against them in Rome. But in all my memory of watching the Ryder Cup, I can't remember a time where, you know, a team member's wife had a drink, you know, thrown at them.
Yeah,
and,
this is crazy.
You know, Rory was unable to even putt. Before you have to wait to the fans through the calm down, and then there was also the stadies, as they call them, which had to throw out fans. So it was bizarre.
Because golf has always been, you know, especially in Britain, it's always been, and Europe, I suppose, in general, it's kind of like it's a gentleman's sport. It's mm-hmm. We'd never really see these kind of scenes at a golf match before.
No, it's as I think Rory described it in his interview. You know, golf is a sport that teaches you discipline. It
yeah.
requires etiquette. So it's, you know, these kind of taunting, it's not something that we relate to golf. It's something more that we'd put to maybe the WWE. You know, where you
yeah.
have these wrestlers trash talking each other. It's bizarre, but you know, we've seen some good memories down the road of heckling happening. I remember in the 2016 Ryder Cup. We had one of the European team members invite a heckler on to shoot a putt on yeah. the green. But this certainly was sort of a sadder affair because it speaks to what's sort of happening in America, or at least people want it to. We had a lot of people saying, oh, this is, you know, a result of Trump's America, but the competition itself took place in a mostly democratic state in New York. So
I think it's easy to blame everything on that, but I just think it was just a bit over the top. But, you know, the best comeback is to beat the Americans in their homeland. So well done, Europe. And to any American listeners this morning, we do love you. We like you. But well done, Europe. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of journalists are trying to flip this as a thing that is representative of all America, but it isn't. It's just a very small number of people who kind of just took it too far. Maybe they had too many drinks in the morning. Maybe that was just the state of it. But talking about comebacks, America nearly had a very, very good
yes.
comeback. One of the best comebacks since Europe since 2012, but it was held off by Shane Lowry's putt, which was sort of poetic justice, considering him and McIlroy were probably the two most abused players there. A lot of people calling Lowry fat and judging his weight, but at the end of the day, he won it for Europe. And I think even if you saw Scheffler's and McIlroy's match there on day three during the singles, and you would have seen that just everyone on the Europe team and even some of the American were just so mentally drained.
Yeah.
Like you were looking at sort of one of the turning points, I thought, was Cameron Young, the rookie who sort of gathered America's momentum. on Sunday, and it was really left to them because a lot of the senior players were just so drained of energy because of just how the energy of the Ryder Cup this year. It takes a lot out of you when you have sort of fans chanting at you, and I suppose the thing that a lot of American players would have been saying, and some European players are saying, there's nothing wrong with doing these sort of chants and all that, but instead of attacking the other players, support your own players.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with chanting.
I'm not that with football, though. I mean, those people say, oh, you must hate Nottingham Forest, and that, you know, there's always a bit of banter, and I always say, oh, you're Nottingham Forest fan, or whatever. But if Derby are doing well, I'd really not bothered what's going on anywhere else. I just want my team to do well. Can we just talk, move on from that, because it's just been a historic win. It's in America, and it doesn't happen very often. So these guys will go down in history as a great team. And talking about history, before we get on to the Premier League, the women, English Roses, win the Rugby World Cup mark at the weekend as well over Canada. That's been massive in England, as you can imagine. I'm not a massive rugby fan. I watched the match, and credit to them. They basically, it was only ever going to be an England win by the looks of the match. But any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm really happy to see that the women's rugby is getting more attention. I would have been tuned into Ireland's women rugby for a long time because one of my former teachers actually was a coach for the national team. So I was always rooting for them, but they didn't really have much of a chance at the World Cup. It was always between a select few teams. And England can be very proud of themselves because women's sports are getting more recognition now. They're being held on a bigger stage, which is what we need because women's sports isn't just about the... I think a lot of people always look at it as, what's the entertainment value I get out of this? But the fact that these competitions are being held at this level in front of this much people isn't about the entertainment value they offer. It's about the opportunities it offers to young girls who are looking on and have something to inspire.
Absolutely, Mark. As a dad of a daughter, my daughter plays football and she plays with the lads on a Wednesday night. There's maybe two or three girls and the rest of them are lads. Those three girls, I tell you, one of them, she's better than all the guys on the pitch. My daughter gets in there, she's scrappy and she'll play. And I love it. I love the fact that they can do that now. And they can feel inspired to watch the women's England, the Lionesses, of course, winning the Euros for England as well. I just think it's such a great inspiration for them.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, we always, the England fans sort of, I guess, drown themselves in misery looking at the men's team, always so close and not there. But now there is, women's teams who are seriously competing for massive trophies, and it's a good time to be an England fan, definitely.
Absolutely. It really is. So well done to the English Roses. That's fabulous stuff. Mark, okay, let's look at the Premier League. MC Hammer, of course, if you remember that back in the day. Mark, are you there, my friend?
Yep, I'm still here.
Okay, now I'm going to start off with Crystal Palace. I watched that match on Saturday, and great win. Liverpool have been the masters at coming back late in the day. It wasn't to be this time, was it?
No, it was sort of a psychological blow to Liverpool because they have won late a lot this season. I think it's been multiple matches. I don't think it's just one or two. It's several that they've won in stoppage time. And eventually, when you're playing that game, when you're walking that tightrope, you are going to find yourself on the other side of it, and it's not going to be too nice. But I suppose they left it quite late to equalise. Even, Chiesa came on in the 87th minute and equalised. But Crystal Palace sort of... It wasn't like a stunning result. I think, every team is taking them seriously. Oliver Glasner has them playing great football, and it definitely was a deserved win that sees them in second place now and still unbeaten in the league, which is just crazy to think. But I'm really happy for Crystal Palace because if any fan base deserves it, it is theirs.
I was looking at the table. Sunderland are up there, aren't they, as well?
Yeah, no, Sunderland have had a run of good results, which, if you ask their fan base, is expected. But I think everyone else is just sort of stunned because we have seen promoted teams in the past, and usually the pattern is three go up, three go down. But I think Sunderland are ready to break that curse.
Yeah, as a Newcastle fan, you must be watching this thinking, what's going on here? watching Sunderland go up there. Fabulous. Oh, wow. Again, Manchester City getting a win. They seem to be almost, can we say City of old, maybe? But they are certainly getting some wins now. And Rodri, I think, has made a big difference back in the team, of course. What are your thoughts?
Definitely. I mean, the City match was encouraging. I'm always careful to call you know, them the City of old, because that City team was just so
good,
so dominant. I still think they're a season or two away from their final build, if you will. But it's definitely something that'll keep them competitive. You know, we mentioned Manchester City up there with Liverpool and Arsenal, and maybe even Chelsea at the start of the season as contenders. And I don't think, you know, the way that they've started the season, and can they consider themselves contenders? But I think definitely next season, the way, you know, this season for them is more about team building and making sure that unit is as cohesive as possible and has the chemistry, because a lot of new players, a lot of young players have come into that side, and they need some time to adjust. Especially there were some major adjustments at the start of the season, obviously starting off with Trafford and now changing to Donnarumma, which your goalkeeper nowadays changes completely how you play.
Absolutely.
So two games into the season, they were completely changing a fundamental part of their team. So it's encouraging, but they still have a bit to go.
Brighton, I think, are an amazing team. They've got such a great infrastructure there. I think that's, this is going to sound pretty bad, but I think that's what covers Graham Potter a little bit when he was there. Such a good setup. Brighton, brilliant. Chelsea, it just seems to be, they are stalling a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, the World Cup win now seems eons away. And Brighton haven't had a great start to the season. These are two teams that, you know, are thought very highly of in the football world, but both haven't had fantastic starts to the season, both with mixed results. I think before this match, Brighton found themselves in 16th or 17th place. It was definitely near the bottom of the table. So both teams came into this match with something to prove.
Absolutely.
And Brighton left the proven team 3-1 versus Chelsea, which we're not going to give too much weight to Chelsea in winning over them, since Man United did it last week and then they went on to have the game that they did against Brentford. But no, you have to give Brighton a lot of credit. Their attacking momentum was just great, and I expect them to continue to do well and secure, hopefully mid-table at the very least, but go on for European contention as we've expected from them the last few years. But Chelsea, there's a lot of questions being asked. They've key players out, of course, so we're not going to judge them too much. But defensive discipline is something that we just need to see more of from them, because they just couldn't contain Brighton at all.
Okay. We'll try and cover as many as we can. Manchester United, I just thought, were poor, poor, poor. And why Anna Rim's still in the job there, I do not know.
Yeah, listen, I'm used to going through it with Man United. I've been following them since around 2011, 2010. And I had 3 good years, and the rest have been, you know, very hard. But this definitely is one of the low moments.
They've had an awful start to the season, and they had an awful end to the last season. He's lost so many matches. I really don't know why they are sticking with him. He seems to be so stubborn on the way he plays and not willing to change anything. And, you know, insanity, you know, the definition is doing the same thing, expecting different results, isn't it?
Yeah, we talk about Gary Neville's stint in Valencia as one of, you know, when you want to compare a manager who's doing a bad job, you compare them to Gary Neville in Valencia. And now Amram has lost more matches than Gary Neville.
Gary's
ever
probably
did.
Happy about that now.
Yeah, he's probably happy about that, because now there's a new reference point for how bad it can get for a big team.
Yeah.
But listen, Man United conceded very early. They conceded 2 goals, I think, in the first half an hour. And then Zesco, which, you know, finally got a goal, which you really hope he got one sooner, you know, for 80 million. But that's besides the point. They just never really looked like equalizing after that. No. They weren't a threat at all. And they brought on another defender, which is just Amran's go-to, which hasn't been working. But United relied on set pieces.
Yeah.
And, you know, we look at Arsenal as a reference for that. you just don't win matches that way. You can settle matches, you can see out matches, but you can't win matches when you're playing for settlement.
Yeah, the difference between Arsenal can score as well now, quite well from any other place as well. We can be talking about Anarim all morning. I think his days are numbered, but we shall see. Let's find Graham Potter, of course, leaving West Ham. Nuno taking over. I think that's a good thing for West Ham United. I think he's a great manager, and Forrest may be the ones that rue the day they lost him.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about good managers in the Premier League, and it does take a certain breed. And I suppose we can overlook them a lot. I mean, just going back to Brentford for a second, we can overlook how they've been playing and all that. But a lot of that is to do with their setup and Keith Andrews being able to sit in as a coach for 2 years or 3 years before he even came into the main job. So a lot of a club's success depends on the infrastructure that's there. Mm. So one, you need a good proven manager, which Nuno Santos is. But then again, you also need a club infrastructure that is cohesive and allows a manager to develop players and develop a system that suits them. Now, Nuno Santo is what you would call a good manager in the Premier League. He's brought two relegation teams, you know, relegation Canada teams in Wolves when they're newly promoted and Nottingham Forest when they had overspent and were fighting for survival. And he turned both of those teams at some point in his stint there into European contenders. Wolves at one point were bagging results and fighting for what would now be a Conference League place, but back then was Europa League. And he also brought, you know, Forest up to the echelons of what was the top of the table in December. But he is essentially what West Ham need at this point, you know, because they don't have that this latter thing we mentioned of a good infrastructure. You know, that's one of the key sort of protest points of the West Ham fan base is, you know, that this board doesn't know what they're doing. But Nuno Santo is the perfect candidate to bring in. And look at they got him when they did, because there's probably a few other teams who would have been eyeing him up otherwise. But he faces Everton in his debut, and listen, we'll see how it goes. Yeah. But I think he is the guy who's going to steady the ship. I would be a big Santo fan, and I'm still baffled as far as did sack him.
Oh, no, it's relational. It was relational, surely. But let's just talk quickly. Arsenal got out of jail yesterday. Newcastle looked pretty good. Great goal from Newcastle, by the way, as well. Header in there virtually off a corner. But it was, I was rooting for Newcastle, actually, just to see if they could get some points on the board and mix it up a bit at the top. But Arsenal, you know, you can't write these teams off. You know, he brought on some great players and they've made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I heard this described by some pundits as a must-win match for Arsenal, which...
It's amazing for September when you think about it.
It is. But, I mean, you know, the last few titles, if you look back, a lot of results have ended up, you know, in this early stage counting, because you get to the end of the season and, as Arsenal have, it could be a few points that are the difference. So you do need it. Every match is a must-win match. And even from the first one to the last one, and they managed to once again show that... that fighting grit with a 96-minute winner. But no, Newcastle put in a very good shift, and it's only going to be a couple more matches before they find, you know, their style and their chemistry with the new player that they brought in. But listen, this is a very important match for Arsenal. You know, there can't be a thing of only taking the title seriously when it comes to February or March. You know, it needs to be taken seriously from the get-go.
Absolutely. And I think that affected City last year, actually. Sorry, Mark. You know, because, you know, they lost so many points. Even if they were coming back, they were going to struggle to ever get back. So, absolutely. Mark, sorry about that. I cut across you there, but we are out of time, my friend. And it's been always fun catching up with you on the latest sports. It's been a great weekend of sport, really has.
Oh, yeah.
And actually too much to watch all at one time. So we may have to pour over some of these. I've got the Everton match tonight. Is that right?
Yeah. So that's going to be the first test for Nuno Santo.
Yeah, we'll look forward to that. Mark, have a lovely week, mate, and we'll speak to you very soon.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels, and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.